Hi, this is Jessica Ravelli, founder of Working Women of Tampa Bay, and you're listening to the Working Women podcast hosted by St. Pete Catalyst. In the studio, we're joined by Michelle Turman, CEO of Catalyst Consulting Services and a really good friend of Working Women of Tampa Bay. She's chairing the upcoming 10th anniversary dinner through our organization and has been very supportive of not only our organization, but other organizations here in Tampa Bay, including a lot of community efforts. And so welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get started. Tell me a little bit about what you do. How do you have an impact here in Tampa Bay?
Sure. So our company, Catalyst Consulting Services, facilitates positive change for nonprofits in the Southeast United States. And the way that we affect change is through executive searches, organizational management. We also conduct large capital campaigns for, you know, billions of dollars here in the area. And so we also have support services like special events, grant writing, executive coaching. And so we're really a turnkey business for nonprofits to come to us for a source for support.
That's awesome. So how did you get started? Because you've been in business now 3 years?
So this business, actually 5 years.
5 years.
I was looking at it the other day, but I've been in nonprofit 27 years, primarily here in Tampa Bay. And for many years, I ran nonprofits and also was a fundraiser and really identified a need probably about 6 years ago that there were three areas that nonprofits just did not do well. The first was they didn't hire very well, particularly for the C-suite. Secondly, they didn't necessarily have a solid infrastructure, policies, procedures that would position them for growth, maybe position them to recruit, retain, and keep people on board. And then thirdly, from a fundraising perspective, they were doing more transactional fundraising versus relationship-based fundraising. And we really started with those three sort of pipelines of business, if you will. And there wasn't really anybody that had the experience as well. From being a CEO, having raised money that was actually doing this in the space, people were brought in either from New York, Chicago, larger cities to fill that void. And so there was really a need here, quite frankly, and my goal was to fill that gap, to have somebody locally here of the 15 consultants I think there were at the time that were doing more capacity building, but not focused on the infrastructure. And that was a gap that I just wanted to fill. And started to see, quite frankly, more stable nonprofits. I wanted to see people staying in the field a lot longer and have a higher rate of retention.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about before you started the business, what kind of roles did you fill and how does that help you with your current position with running the company?
Sure. So when I started a nonprofit, believe it or not, I was 17 and wow. I was an intern. So I really started from the bottom up. So I've been a volunteer, I've been an intern. I've worked on the programmatic side of the organization, and then eventually I shifted more into fundraising. And so having an understanding of what it takes to actually raise the funds to fulfill a mission was a huge piece of what I did. And ultimately, I wanted to go in the management and the administrative piece and go into the CEO role. And ultimately, that's what I ended up working on was the HR background, the strategic planning. And so I literally have had almost every role in a nonprofit that you can have. And so for me, that means a lot. When I'm working with clients or I'm talking to somebody about how we can facilitate change, I've been in their shoes. I understand what the roles are, how they can be supported, and quite frankly, how to be maybe more efficient in what they're currently doing. And so that's just something that I felt was a need. Most CEOs come up on the programmatic side. Maybe they haven't done the fundraising. They're not as comfortable with the human resources, the hiring talent, maybe even the blessing releasing of talent. Working with boards and all of those areas I have experience in. I would probably say that the hiring piece is the one I like the most. Placing people, I get a lot of gratification from that, you know, getting right fit, making sure there's longevity there because the organization really benefits from that.
Yeah, because having the right person in that role can really be a game changer for a nonprofit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Michelle, tell me a little bit about some of the challenges that nonprofits face in 2019.
Sure. I think there's really three main challenges that I'm seeing facing the nonprofits and may be able to offer some solutions as they can become more nimble. The first, which is continued really since 2008, is the fact that funding is becoming an increasing issue. Whether it's a decrease at the federal level, a national level, it's the fact that most nonprofits, quite frankly, need to be more self-sustaining. And so whether it's contract funding or grant funding, they need to really be building up and diversifying their fundraising to support their mission. And so that continues to be an issue. how nonprofits can respond to that is by really taking a look at what they're doing in terms of their costs, but also how they're raising money. And what has not changed is the fact that 72%, if we look at that sort of giving chart or giving part of the pie, is made up of individuals who give to nonprofits, the remainder being special events, grants, foundations. So 72% of individuals, those are the ones having an impact on the organization. So if you're not spending your time managing those relationships, bringing those people closer to the organization, they're really the ones making the impact through larger gifts, through estate giving, then you're really missing an opportunity with your organization. So those numbers have still made the difference, but what it means is you have to move from transactional fundraising to relationship building fundraising. And that's hard for some nonprofits that are heavily special event driven and have bikes and walks and fashion shows, for example. It's a point of entry. But if you're not doing anything to really bring them close to the organization, that will come out in the wash over time. And then you'll be faced with difficult decisions as to what programs you keep, what staff you keep. So funding is always a challenge. And we're seeing that now so. And you're also seeing funders wanting to have nonprofits partner together, collaborate, to have a wider footprint. That's something that's just it's shifting in terms of what individuals and foundations will give to. So when you have a diversified portfolio of giving, that says a lot also to funders. I think the second piece is that we don't think of nonprofits as a business, and they are a business. They need to make a profit to survive. And so taking a good hard look at where you're spending your money and raising your money, I think is key. One of the things I have noticed is that it's been really hard on that vein to retain talent. And so nonprofits are notorious for not being able to go out and really retain talent because maybe they don't have the correct salary, or maybe they're not knowing how to market that job. And maybe they're so staff rich, they haven't learned to look at what we really do well. And so at times they need to look at what can we outsource and then reinvest. So maybe that is we need to outsource the marketing because that's not our gifting. We're here curing cancer, for example, if you're Moffitt, and we need to be focused on that. So let's outsource the marketing. Let's outsource the special events for a better rate of return. Let's outsource grant writing because maybe that needs to shift. So I think looking and seeing what you can do better as a business and not having a huge amount of overhead, and go to the experts that have that experience and really focus, laser focus on your mission and programs is huge. Accounting even, for example, do you have to be able to have your HR in-house? Do you have to be able to have your accounting and bookkeeping in-house, or can you outsource that? And I think the third thing that nonprofits don't necessarily do well or need to address is the duplication of their services. So we all have been touched by cancer, for example, in some way or some form of cancer. But do we really need to have one organization just focusing on pediatric versus one on neuroblastoma versus one on brain? You know, so I think that is a real issue that funders are seeing. There's a duplication. Can we be partnering in some ways? And so bringing more awareness, really combining financial resources to end cancer of all forms for all ages. And so I think that's something that we're starting to see now is a duplication. So being able to sit and look what we do well, who we need to be partnering with, how do we grow and grow smart? And thus, that's how we came up with the model. How do you recruit and retain talent? How do you look at your fundraising based on relationships? And what can you outsource from an organizational management structure perspective to really, quite frankly, be relevant and sustainable?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So running a nonprofit like a business, outsourcing, retaining talent, figuring out what your unique proposition, selling proposition is, which is, you know, going right into what you're talking about with duplication, all those things, including relationship building, which is something that happens in the for-profit world too, all of those things can better equip a nonprofit to be successful, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, let's pivot to you being a business owner. You said at the top of the show, you've been in business for about 5 years now. Tell me a little bit about what life's like as a business owner.
Much different than a CEO of a nonprofit. And the reason being, and I also tell this to many people that are shifting from that field into entrepreneurship, is that you have to now think of yourself as an entrepreneur. So being the CEO of a company, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, that's somebody else's advertising budget. It's somebody else's vision. And it was very humbling, I would say, when I became an entrepreneur and decided to start my own business. There were things that I needed to learn, and there were different pools that I needed to fish in. So I was really good at fishing in the nonprofit pool. I knew where to prospect. I knew where to spend my time. I knew what the pains were. What I needed to do was surround myself with entrepreneurs, people starting their own business that really could either be somebody that would provide guidance, they would be a sounding board, or they could just say, hey, you need to think about X, Y, Z. And I just remember that first year trying to wrap my brain around the fact of, oh, this is where I need to invest if I want to do some marketing. This is where I need to spend my time. This is where I don't need to spend my time. This is my worth. This is, you know, how I do a proper contract. If I want to take on collaborative partners, this is what it looks like. And I just remember there was a shift. It was very uncomfortable, I would say, because now you're surrounding yourself with more business people, which is extremely the opposite of being around people in nonprofit, right? Because everything's about the mission. Everything's about the heart. It's about how to save a dollar. And when you switch over to entrepreneurship, it is about how am I investing in myself? And that's okay to do that, right? So that was a big shift for me. Now, fast forward almost 5 years later, I've gotten better at that. Primarily because of the fact that, you know, I've surrounded myself with groups like Working Women of Tampa Bay and other people that, you know, have that belief in themselves and they understand where they need to invest to be successful. But that was a real shift for me. And I've tried to share that with people that that's real. So you've really have to, particularly in those two pools that I'm playing in, I wasn't somebody that was in the for-profit that then started my business. I was in a field that really coveted lean, you know, efficiency. Don't spend a lot of money. Everything is for the heart of it. And then I had to really be kind of tough and say, this is my time and this is what I'm worth. And it was very different for me. So some hard lessons there.
So what do you know now that you wish you knew 3 or even 5 years ago when you started the business?
Think bigger. I would have thought a lot bigger than at the time. At the time, I was thinking, here's what Tampa Bay needs because I've been in this area over 46 years. So I know the area, I've grown up in the area, I'm involved in the community, you know, we give as a family, I give as a philanthropist in the area. I knew it very well. So I knew exactly what the gap was to fill. I don't think I had enough confidence in myself to think you should be thinking much bigger, that this is actually a challenge that goes beyond Tampa Bay. It's in the Southeast. And you need to think bigger that, is it just going to be you? Are you going to bring in partners? Do you want employees again? So I think I would have had more confidence in myself and thought a lot bigger and then maybe scaled it back from there. I think that was the biggest challenge, was just sort of being very conservative is the word that I would use in the beginning, just because of the field that I came from. And so that was a big risk for me to go out on my own personally from the field I was in. People just don't do that. So thinking bigger, I think, would have been the best advice.
Yeah, and I think that that's a challenge a lot of female entrepreneurs face. I think women in general tend to be a little bit more risk adverse, a little bit more conservative. And, you know, confidence can be a real issue. And if you are a brand new business owner, you have to build that confidence over time. And so as we grow as business owners and become more and more successful, I feel like then we have, you know, that confidence to be able to like reach higher and higher. But I would think that most women business owners have those similar challenges in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So speaking of thinking bigger, is anything else on the horizon over the next couple of years for you and your business? What are your big dreams?
One of my big dreams is to put on, I don't know if conference is the right word or a workshop, but I see some of the challenges as we've discussed earlier. If we don't start pivoting as a profession, as a field, we're going to continue to not retain talent. We're going to have people move more towards the for-profit arena, which is fine. But I think we're hitting a point where we're not having important discussions, discussions like, what does a merger look like if there's duplication, right? How are you utilizing technology and fundraising? Because relationships are changing. It's hard. We're vying for people's time. So there are things that are happening in the nonprofit world that is not the same old topics. It's not just how to build a board. It's, you know, not how to raise more money. It's the fact that there are some things that if we don't have a discussion, what is this field going to look like? And so, again, I see a gap in that conversation. There really aren't conferences that address the different types of platforms and technologies that we're starting to see, just like when you go on Amazon and you want to purchase something, and immediately if you want to give to Operation Smile, why aren't more nonprofits doing that on their own? So there are IT and technology trends. There are mergers and acquisitions. But that takes a bold board, a bold leader to sit down and say, you know what? I'm not just going to sit here on my little fiefdom and own this. I want to go out and see, do other people want to partner? So one of the things that I've really been thinking about is filling a gap and having some type of platform, if you will, and pulling together other visionary leaders from other fields that aren't necessarily from nonprofit, but they know what it means to tackle these challenges, right? To retain the talent, to look at the marketing, to look at the technology, because I don't think we have the depth in our field per se. Outsourcing is a great thing, but the fact remains is that we don't have that talent. So I would love to put together a platform where we're addressing the issues of how nonprofits are going to stay sustainable, relevant, how we're going to get more people in the workforce, and how we're going to do it a lot smarter, you know, in the next 10 years. So that's something that I'm really committed to, because I think that philanthropy is going to have to change. The way that we recruit and employ people are going to have to change. And I think the way that we run and structure nonprofits will absolutely have to change. The economy will do that. There's so many things out there vying for people's attention, and we need to start doing it a lot more responsibly and a little bit more efficiently. So that is something I'm really committed to, in kind of pulling together people and saying, how do we do that? Because I don't want to necessarily get in the conference business per se, but I definitely want to have a conversation that is not being had in our field.
Yeah, it sounds like innovation, right? That is a chief topic that could be shared among nonprofits to really kind of take them to the next level. And if that conversation is missing right now, especially in Tampa Bay area or beyond, then nonprofits are falling behind in that innovation and technology space. So it sounds like there is a gap, and it sounds like it needs to be met. Well, we look forward to hearing a little bit more about that sometime soon. So let's pivot now to women, right? So you are chairing the 10th anniversary Working Women Dinner that's benefiting our foundation, the Working Women Foundation, which gives seed money to women entrepreneurs. You've been a part of our organization over the last 5 years. Tell me what it means to you to have women support women, and for you to support an organization where women can come together and support each other.
For me, it's everything. I really grew up at a time where I had all male mentors, and that wasn't a bad thing. They were wonderful mentors. Fortunately, the fundraising piece of what I did, 80% of the field was women. So there were aspects that I felt very supported, but then there were aspects where it was just more male driven. And so I think it's extremely important for women to support women, because if we don't set that tone, if we don't set that example, quite frankly, who will? So anything that I can do, whether it's the time, treasure, or talent to support that, I think that's extremely important. The reason why I really got involved with Working Women Tampa Bay was because when I was starting my business, it was also aligned with some other groups that I was working with. And I realized, wow, there's a lot of women out there that if we come together and sharing resources, sharing challenges, being vulnerable with one another, it was a support system that I quite frankly didn't have before. It was a different type of a conversation. And so supporting women through, number one, you know, participating with the organization, but then assisting and helping form the foundation. I have not applied to the foundation, for example, for my business, but I am such a catalyst for others to say, you have got to, you know, hone in and let us support you and apply for a seed money grant. So I love the concept. As someone who has received assistance in my time, whether it's through financial aid for going to school or things of that nature, it's really important for me to have to pay it forward. And so as someone who has taken that journey, I really want to support how we can help. So whether it's 500, 1,000, 2,000, I love the fact that we're putting the money where the mouth is. So you've got a networking program that supports, you're developing those relationships and what Working Women of Tampa Bay does. But I think the second step is, you know, how can we give that small boost? And to some, that's everything. So for me, it's really important to say, well, how can I help? I'm still very early on in my journey. There's so much more I need to know. But my hope is that if I'm sowing some of these seeds and bringing other women into the fold, just like so many have done for me, that it's going to really shift that perception. And for some, it's real, the competitiveness of it and how women treat one another and opening those doors. Earned opportunities. But how are we opening those doors for women, encouraging them to do better, encouraging them to really own their business, to really understand what they need to do to be successful? So it's changing that conversation.
It really is our responsibility, right? As women business owners who have had success, I've had success for about 10 years now. You've been having success for 5. it's about giving back and turning around and pulling up the next generation of women entrepreneurs. Because as you said earlier in the podcast, there's such a shift, right, in your frame of mind when you go from working in nonprofit or even corporate into entrepreneurship. It's really an uphill battle for the first year. And so you need that support system. And sometimes you need that little bit of seed money. So I feel like you and I are both on the same page that as successful business owners, now it's our responsibility to turn around and give back to those women who are up and coming and to help support them. Because I think about 10 years ago when I was starting Working Women, if I had had a little bit more support, I may have grown a little faster. I feel like I was kind of learning as I go. And it sounds like you were doing the same. And really what Working Women of Tampa Bay and the foundation does is to help facilitate some of those, that learning and that education earlier on in a women's business so that she can grow faster, quicker. And so, well, I just appreciate everything you do for our organization and the support that you give to the nonprofits in Tampa Bay. You're a leader here in Tampa Bay, especially among philanthropy. I mean, when I think of women that I want to turn to when it comes to starting a foundation like we did, or talking about, you know, how the community can come together to support a cause, the first person I think of is you. And so I just commend you on the leadership that you have here in the Tampa Bay area and the foresight that you have about taking nonprofits in our area into that next, you know, the future of philanthropy. And it sounds like we have a lot to expect from you in the future. And we look forward to hearing all about what you're going to be doing in 2020. So thank you so much, Michelle, for joining us in this conversation. As I mentioned, this is Michelle Turman. She is the CEO and principal consultant of Catalyst Consulting Services. And we're just so grateful to have you on the show. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.